Tonight, James counts on his vagina. Mike prevents a bunghole yeast infection. And we backtrack through duck shit.
James from StrongPunk.com and back in black for the first time since last week. This is
Jack Lame.
I hate you. This is Couch Potato Mike.
Not Jack Lame.
No, not Jack Lame. Not Jack me off.
Jack Lame. I told you I was going to do that and you still fell for it. You're like, I forgot.
I don't fucking listen to you.
I know, Jack Lame. How are you this week?
Well, I was doing pretty good until you fucked up my intro.
Called you Jack Lame?
Yeah, fucking yep. Shit. No, yep. I'm doing it, so, it, as always, another weird week, but for the most part uneventful, so that makes me happy.
Mostly good.
Yeah.
Mostly good. We had,
I started smoking a pipe.
Yeah.
Tobacco, that is.
Shitty pipe. Shitty pipe tobacco.
Yeah, the pipe is nice. I like the pipe.
Yeah, the pipe looks amazing.
Well, all tobacco would be shitty tobacco to you. You don't smoke.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I enjoy a good cigar on occasion.
Yeah, you are kind of a cigar I swear to God, we were like fucking switched at birth with like two rich babies.
Yeah.
Or something. Because we really want to enjoy the finer things in life, the snobby shit.
Just in smaller quantities.
Yeah. Because, you know, we can only afford the smaller quantities.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know damn well I'd be sitting in a comfortable leather-bound armchair in some study right now, smoking one of them Sherlock Holmes pipes.
Yeah.
Either that or we'd be sitting there with some Cubans, which are now legal in this country.
Yes, I want to find some. If you know some, send me a link.
Wearing my smoking jacket and ascot.
Yes. It's too damn hot for that shit. Although it feels pretty good this morning.
Oh, I'd be in my mansion with, like, the best central heat and air the money could buy.
You know what? I would actually have a tiny house complex instead of a mansion. Small, decentralized buildings and stuff. Like, I would...
You'd have a mansion, just all the rooms would be separate from each
other. Yeah, I was like, I would have a study, but that would be an entire tiny house. Like, I'd have a tiny house study and come over to the study, but it wouldn't be connected to the house. And it'd be like a central courtyard or something.
Would you have a covered walkway?
Parts of it. Parts of it would be open air. Like, I may arrange them like a pavilion style where you have a interior courtyard. And then, maybe like next to each other with a connecting porch and overlapping thing. Like sort of some of the Japanese, architecture was like that, was its courtyard and then like connected walkways.
You know, there's a show I used to watch called You Live in What, where, basically a man had pretty much done what you're describing, but with a bunch of travel trailers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, same difference.
I mean, you're halfway here though. We just rearranged your travel trailers and,
yeah,
them up and
I like collecting structures.
Yeah, you have a bunch on your property. So about me, back to me.
Oh, who gives a shit about you?
Yesterday was my 2-year soberversary.
Congratulations, Broham.
Yes. I've not drank the boozahol in 2 years, and I celebrated a day and a half cheat extravaganza.
And we are all so proud of you. Give it up to James.
Yay. While we're talking about making booze today. It's hilarious. But anyway, I'm not anti-booze, and brewing is actually fun.
And if you get on Facebook, try to find the pictures of James, because we took him out, and I bought him a celebratory Mexican meal yesterday, and I told the motherfucking staff it was his birthday.
So they put a sombrero on my head and wiped ice cream on my face and beard.
Yes, while singing a language that I don't understand. You know I don't speak Spanish.
You don't speak Spanish. Yeah. I went to the fair, a goat nibbled on my finger, I saw black smithery, and I ate bad cheat foods there too. Today is back to the good food though. We'll be talking about exercise later on, but not nutrition. And speaking of, what do we have coming up today, Mr. Couch Potato?
Coming up on today's episode... We're going to be talking about a merger between Anheuser-Busch.
No, last.
Oh, between Anheuser-Busch and Miller Corporation.
Yep.
We're going to be telling you about how an engineer makes a device for, getting water in the desert.
Yep.
It's going to be part two on our home brewing. On Nutrition Punk, we're going to be giving you the five best exercises for preppers. And no, I can't spell exercises right offhand. It's too goddamn early.
Exercises.
If time permitting, we'll be reviewing on the survival thingy, the tactical tie down.
I don't see the brewing episode will go long today. We covered the basics last week with all the equipment and stuff. So we just need to talk about just sort of like how just throwing out quick recipes, basically. It should go fast.
Okay, good.
But we will chase rabbits, so I'm not going to make promises.
Yeah, that's Suck why it. I said time permitting. So, yeah. But before we get into all that, it is time for a word from our sponsor, Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee is my favorite and preferred coffee. They support a local orphanage in Thailand, which I am fond of. They provide those little tykes with fooding, schooling, medicaling. Fooding, schooling, medicaling. And something else. There's always a fourth thing I forget. Food, school, clothes, medical, I don't know. They provide for those kids, and life is good for them because they're orphans and they would probably die in the forest. They pay their workers a fair wage.
Not something you can get a lot of in Thailand.
Nope. So they can actually support their families and their villages by harvesting these coffee trees.
Yeah, they can support them.
So yeah, support Mai Tai Coffee. This will probably be the last month that we have Mai Tai Coffee. So send them some goodbye love. Go buy some coffee. I'll be buying some coffee because it is my favorite coffee. Hands down. I saw a really weird documentary about, not documentary, but they're talking about coffee and how coffee got in South America because it came from somewhere else.
Right.
And there was a king in possibly France or England that had, like, a giant greenhouse built to keep his, like, prize coffee bean tree alive.
Okay.
But he wasn't doing anything with it. It was like, oh, you know, it was just like a show of power. Like, he was just so wealthy. He's like, he built this giant greenhouse to keep this fucking little tree alive. But it wasn't, like, drinking the coffee. He's just like, oh, look at my fancy tree. So this dude became a spy for, like, the South Americans, jumped over the fence, ran for the greenhouse, stole a clipping, escaped the property with guards on his heels, got on a boat, came to South America, and that's what created the South American coffee industry.
Wow. So every...
Yeah, and he had to guard that clipping. Like, they almost died on the trip because they got kind of lost at a storm stuff, and they started to run out of water. And the guy, the spy that stole the coffee clipping, was like, do I give the shrub clipping a drink, or do I drink and not die? And he had to go days without water, and he was like on this deathbed until they hit land.
Oh my god.
He's like, coffee tree, you better make me rich.
I imagine it did.
Oh yeah.
Most people agree that some of the best coffee in the world comes from Colombia.
But it's second to Mai Tai coffee.
Yeah. And now it's time for us to jump right into our first news story of the week, about how Anheuser-Busch and Miller are merging, and what that's going to mean for us,
I guess. Getting dumb names. Merger of beer giants Anheuser-Busch InBev, that's part of their name now, and S.A.B. Miller, Sab Miller, faces obstacles. I didn't even know it was facing obstacles, but I would imagine that would be a antitrust issue, because they're the two biggest, really.
Yeah, but you can't really call it a monopoly. There's so many more out there.
No, some of the beer things get really monopolistic with, like, the distribution laws and stuff, unless they've changed it. It used to be federal law where, like, I couldn't start a homebrew company, go on the internet and say, oh, we make Survival Punk brews, and then sell to you, the end company. Yeah. I had to sell to a distributor that could then sell to the end company. Like, you couldn't have that direct business relationship between people.
That's gay.
It is gay. It would be, and this comes from the NewYorkTimes.com, it would be the biggest merger in history. One long discussed by analysts and executives in the beverage industry. But a combination of Anheuser-Busch InBev and SAB Miller, the two biggest brewers in the world, also bring, so the name would be like Anheuser-Busch InBev Sam Miller, would also bring a close scrutiny from antitrust regulators, who have already shown skepticism about the number of recently announced huge mergers. And there's a reason we're talking about this, besides just being a homebrew episode. Still, should the two agree to combine, it would bring a clear benefit to Anheuser-Busch InBev.
which for 2 decades has been an acquisition machine that has swelled into the world's largest brewer. Begun as a local brewery in Brazil,
Brazil?
Who put that question mark on the teleprompter? The company has expanded around the world with an enormous buying spree. One capped by the takeover of Anheuser-Busch in 2008, which brought Bud Light and Stella Artois under one roof. You like how I said that correctly? Yet, I'll let you take over there. Yet, sales of traditional mega brand beers have fallen in the markets like the United States and Europe as consumers have moved towards wine and craft brews. That has prompted the largest brewers to search for additional ways to jolt their growth.
Buying Sab Miller would give Anheuser-Busch InBev more exposure to fast-growing emerging markets, particularly in Latin American countries like Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. Moreover, Sab Miller's shares have fallen more than 11% in the last 12 months, making the company more vulnerable to a takeover. We are not surprised that ABI would be interested in buying SAB to create Mega Brew.
Trevor, I sound like that. It sounds like it should be like a truck show on Saturday. It's like Saturday Mega Brew.
Trevor Sterling, an analyst for the Sanford C. Bernstein and Company, wrote in a research note on Wednesday. Bless you. Yet joining the two companies would most likely prompt investigations from the government officials around the world, given the amount of market share that the combined brewer would control. The competitive harm is pretty scary, said Diana Elmos, the president of the American Antitrust Institute. The concern is higher prices for consumers. Analysts and investors have already speculated that a potential takeover of Sab Miller would prompt a huge number of follow-on deals as the two companies shed assets to win regulatory approval. One almost certain demand from the United States Justice Department, according to analysts, would be to dissolve Miller Coors, the joint venture that Sam Miller formed with the Molson Coors in 2008 to combine their United States operations.
So there's some sort of already kind of merger between Miller and Coors?
Miller and Coors, yeah.
Weird. That partnership, which Sab Miller owns a 58% stake in Molson and Coors, so they're basically own them.
Yeah.
A 42% stake owns several major brands, including Miller Lite, Coors Lite, and Blue Moon. Ooh, Blue Moon. Under the terms of partnership agreement, Molson Coors has a right to make the first offer and for the last Sab Miller stake in the joint venture, should it choose to sell. Taking control of Miller Coors could yield. So now it's Sab Miller Coors. Could yield hundreds of millions of dollars in cost savings for Molson Coors. So Molson's another brand. So that's everything's one company. Molson is a Canadian brewery.
Yeah. Son of a bitch.
Analysts have estimated, and it could give Molson Coors more control over the brewer's operations in the United States, its biggest market. Shares in Molson Coors jumped more than 14% on Wednesday, and the prospect of the blah, blah, blah. You can read the rest at NewYorkTimes.com. Link will be in the show notes. I don't want to kill the whole episode talking about sales percentages and blah, blah, blahs and the yakety schmackities. Let's have some orange juice.
You got orange juice?
I wish.
God damn it. Tease me like that.
Yeah. You can drink 7-year-old Mountain Dew up there.
No.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. Your bottles have changed shapes.
They have. The carbonation's gone out, so you should like them more. You're welcome. I saved them for you.
No, I one time drunk a 9-month-old Faygo from the backseat of my car, and spent the next week vomiting.
Yeah.
It was not much fun for Little Harpo.
No. I shared this on Facebook as you want another sign that the economy is going to take a downturn. When the two biggest brewers in the world decide to take a merger, it's because they see economic struggle coming up and they want to consolidate their resources. Obviously, what, in 12 months they took 11 months they took a 12% downturn?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, for a business, you're like, oh, that's nothing, you know, but that's huge. That's huge for them.
There is one thing. I mean, they're talking about possibility of rising prices of their product because of the gigantic merger, but Still, there's enough other beer companies out there that you jack the price up on anything too much, you're going to wind up losing customers to your competitors. It's just the way, it's the weight of the world. Humans, by nature, cheap bastards.
They're also pretty brand loyal. I was like, land royal? No, brand loyal. Like, people that are smokers, they will, like, some of them are pretty independent, but some people will smoke their brand no matter what.
I'll give you that on that. I'll give you that, because there are plenty of cheaper cigarettes out there than Marlboro, but people who smoke Marlboro
will only smoke
fucking Marlboro. They don't care that they're paying $6 and $7 a goddamn pack for it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. And there's other people who just want to smoke, and they don't give a shit. They're like, yeah. They'll go to the store, hey, what's the cheapest smokes?
Yeah, I've done that myself. Walked in, I'm like, what's the cheapest pack of menthols you got?
Yeah. And like, oh, we got these L32s here, buddy. I'll take a pack.
God damn, with the L32s.
My God. Oh. So, yeah.
There's a story behind that, but we're not telling you.
Not today.
You have to figure it out.
We got someone out there also smoked some L32s. He's like, oh, fuck. Like, what? Like, we fucking Daniel Tosh him. Like, one guy's like, I fucking smoked L32s. These dudes are my bros. No.
I mean, goddamn, at one point in my history, I had literally found a fucking place in another state that I was living at the time. I'm like, what's your cheapest pack of cigarettes? And they're like, these. They're $1.35 a pack. They were literally a white pack with black lettering that said filter cigarettes.
Oh. That's what they're trying to go. Anyway, back to the article. I see more of this coming up. Like, if you watch the mergers and stuff coming up, mm-hmm. I see more of it happening, for the big companies. Like you kind of point out, some of the smaller brewers, they're actually starting to take off. The regulations on them are starting to ease up a little bit, or it's getting a little bit easier to sell to the end user and the distribution and stuff. So hopefully unlike normally with expansion or collapse, hopefully the small guy will come out on top instead of, you know, the crumbles and only the big guys surviving.
Well, you know, fuck that. You know, fuck
if you make your own beer, like we were talking about.
I was about to say, the listeners of this show won't have to fucking worry about rising prices or anything like that, because we have now taught them how to make their own damn beer.
Yeah, and my recipe tastes better than Anheuser-Busch, Coors, Miller, Molson.
I can attest to that.
Blue Moon is different, though. Blue Moon is tasty stuff.
I can count on one hand the number of times each year I drink beer.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I can count on my vagina the number of times that I drink beer each year.
You heard that here. James has a vagina.
Just another, like, if you're on the cusp of, like, I don't know, should I double down and really start prepping more, or should I, this is going to be a rough year, guys. Keep that in mind. And moving along to the next story, which, I've read about these things before, so this isn't the first time I've heard about this sort of device. It may be even an old article found. So, this comes from Minds.com. Minds.com. Alpha with a flashlight. Engineer creates a device capable of producing drinking water in the desert.
In the desert, you say.
Is this Dune? Are we talking about Dune? I love that series. I could get you into it.
Those are words.
Spanish inventor Enrique Viega has created a machine that condenses water from the atmosphere into drinkable, filtered water. The machine runs on the same amount of electricity a domestic washing machine would use and condenses the water to 30 degrees Celsius, which is 0 degrees?
Is metric. No.
No.
That's the other way around.
60 or so?
60 or 7. I don't know. Fuck metric.
I don't do the metric. Anyway, 30 degrees Celsius, because I know 32 degrees... They're zero, so anyway, Celsius at a relative humidity of 17%. Water is filtered and stored for use at any time.
Wait, god damn it. The humidity of your water is only 17%?
I was just going to gloss over that.
That makes no...
The machine, what? The machine runs on the same amount of electricity a domestic washing machine would use and condenses the water to 30 degrees Celsius at a relative humidity. Maybe it requires a relative humidity of 17%.
I'm hoping.
Which would be fairly easy, which means it would work anywhere. I mean, at, you know, in the desert, relativity, 17% would be good. I mean, I think so. I don't,
17% is really low humidity.
I don't know.
I mean, think about Middle Tennessee levels of humidity.
Like 70?
Oh, God.
VA guys company, Aquia Generators, has patented the machine. It's currently creating 1,500 of them. I was like, 15 million! No. 1,500 of them for the government of Namibia. So he's Spanish, Namibia. And he's making them for...
Namibia.
Yes.
There's a little I there you missed.
I'm gonna go back. You know what? A couple, like the last couple weeks, I've not corrected you when you've said shit crazy.
Hey, I haven't been correcting you for a while. Well, it's just there is no country called Namibia.
It is. It's, you have to go through, you have to go through the fucking, wardrobe to get to it. Behind the closets in the back.
That's Narnia.
No, it's Namibia. They're next door to each other. They're like cousins. They're usually warring with each other. I started working on this device nearly 20 years ago.
Jesus wept.
Ah, said Viega. The first registered patent is from 1995 when a drought was crossing Spain and made me working on this. So maybe he's not. Maybe he's Spanish, actually.
I have made a conscious.
Never mind. Spanish inventor. And you dumb fucker. Oh, I imagine this guy is a young guy.
Wait, is the device that fucking big? That looks like the size of a goddamn trailer.
Yeah. According to Aquiator Generator's website, a 30 degrees Celsius and 60% humidity, there is more than 16 grams, so this is atmospheric pressure, at 30 degrees Celsius and 60% humidity, so here, there is more than 16 grams of water per kilogram of air. This is going, I don't, when the air temperature is lowered below that dew point, if lowered below the dew point, water is created similar to rain, moving more or less air. They are more able to obtain the desired amount of water. This works even in the desert. They also state the machine does not create any pollution.
The cost of the creation of the water is directly related to the cost of energy. In California, where the kilowatt hour costs about 12 cents, 1 liter of water would end up costing the consumer about 4 cents.
Oh.
Oh, thanks for letting me read like the last two fucking sentences in the article, you cock.
Yes, those were the most important articles in the section of the thing.
Yeah, you let me read the shit about the shit that I see pop up on your damn page.
You won't believe what we found inside the new 2015 penny.
Oh, God.
Probably my balls. Probably the New World Order coming to get you. Anyway, I have... This is not the first device I've ever seen for extracting atmospheric pressure into drinking water. And this is a concept, I mean, obviously it's been around for a while. There are some super old, air quotes, technologies, like air wells that you stack rocks. Because, you know, rocks, they will take in the air all day, and then they'll help you condense the water, and then the water will drip down inside of the air wells. Hi, Jordan. And then you can create water on the inside that way by condensing water on the inside of rocks. And then I've seen one that uses it as a billboard, which is self-containing. So like the billboard will, like they put these billboards in the desert in places like Narnia and they're self-contained. Like they use solar and they collect the air moisture in the air and then it drips down and you just come up to the damn spigot for your village and like get your water.
That's pretty sweet.
Which looks a bit smaller on this device. So,
what the hell was that thing?
What?
I mean, the fucking picture. I mean, the damn thing was gigantic.
Yeah. Maybe his machine works more efficiently.
Maybe that's why they're only making 1,500 of the goddamn things. Yeah. I was thinking, I don't know. I thought we were talking about something much smaller and more portable for preppers.
My cell phone spits out water. There's an app for that.
There should be.
Well, I think the concept of extracting moisture from the atmosphere is the takeaway here. And I want to like find enough rocks to try to build a miniature air well because I've seen the articles shared around the prepper blogosphere
But I'm not seeing anyone who's like, hey, I made this fucking air well. Here's the water. Here's how I did it. Pictures, explanations, video. Well, none of that exists.
Do it.
I need to collect a lot of rocks and then build it. And I don't. And it'd be super trial and error because, well, I'm good about that. I don't care. Because I've not seen anyone like showing you how to do it or modern explanations. They're like, so it's really, it's all concept, and I've not seen anyone actually doing it. I hate that shit.
Well, we should do it and, you know, like document the entire thing.
Hails to the app. So,
my goal is to eventually turn Survival Punk into a TV show.
Yeah.
Or at least a video, you know, like something, streaming series. I don't know.
I gotta start planning out more YouTube videos. I think I'm gonna put up that grinding clip that I took the other day. Anyway, main topic of the show this week, we're talking about...
Still talking about homebrewing.
And this week...
We're gonna get into the more flavorful side of things.
Yeah, I guess if you want to think of it that way. We're only 25 minutes, and this is gonna be a short episode. Good, because I'm gonna go to sleep. So we're gonna talk about cider... Mead, and possibly some quick lemonade, because we didn't make it yet. We are going to make it. I'm going to make it today or tomorrow, and then next week on the episode, we should be able to talk about it. Mike can talk about it while he's drinking on the show.
You're damn right. We'll be drinking first thing on Sunday morning.
By the end of the episode, he's all like, why do you want to blip, 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 blip? It's all falling out. Wiggling on the floor, doing the sideways Homer Simpson walking on the floor thing.
See, I couldn't call it. I could never call it a blismal blip blop. That's what I call taking a puff of my inhaler.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm an asthmatic motherfucker. That's why I'm not more active.
Oh, that's a crutch. But anyway,
I got your crutch right here, cocksucker.
Whatever. You need a crutch. Let's start with cider because I've made a couple batches of cider in the past.
I'm so mad that I peed in your butt.
Whatever. Couple batches of cider. And it's super easy. Like, my recipe, I shared, and I have a link in the show notes to the article I did, so you can see pictures and follow along. But it's so fucking easy that you don't really need it. So go to whatever your local organic, higher quality, good store is. Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Sprouts. I think they have Sprouts up north. So whatever it is, whatever you're, like, where you go for your organic produce, usually you can't. So you're looking for organic apple cider, usually in a glass jug, like a glass 1 gallon jug.
Uh-huh.
I like the glass 1 gallon jug because it's a nice, pretty vessel to make your apple cider in.
Uh-huh.
And you want it to be organic because it doesn't have preservatives to kill the yeast you're going to put in it.
Yeah, preservatives can be a bitch.
They are, especially when you're... I mean, it's good because it keeps things from going bad, but it's bad because it keeps good things
from going good.
Yeah! So, yeah, you just need a fucking glass jug of apple cider, and then I got... Mike, what's my favorite thing? A rubber bung! So... I got a rubber stopper bung. I got it from Brew Supply Store. You can order them on the internet. I'll find one and throw the show notes on Amazon. It's just like a rubber stopper that you put in the glass jug that has a hole in it.
Yes, the bung hole.
The bung hole. That you then, you take your ferment, this thing, you take your airlock.
Yeah, because people can fucking see that.
It's right here, guys. Just look at it. Just look through the podcast and see the airlock. I'm shaking. You jab that into it after you fill it with water and whatnot,
you
and then it
that
keeps
in your bung hole.
It keeps the CO2. It keeps the air from getting in. The CO2 it will get out. You get your yeast. That's it. I mean, I don't even do anything. I take the cider. I usually pour out a glass or a half a glass to drink, so I have room in the vessel because usually it's filled up pretty high to the top. So you pour a glass, you drink it, you take your yeast. I don't even bloom the yeast. So blooming is, I think we mentioned it last time.
Blooming's not for yeast, it's for onions.
You hate blooming onions. I want to make a paleo one.
I only had one and they fucked it up, okay? I might actually like one.
How do you know they fucked it up? Maybe that's the way it always is.
No,
anyway,
they fucked it up.
So blooming the yeast is pitching your yeast in like a cup of warm, as in 70 degree water.
Now you are going to
want some sugar.
You are going to want to use gloves when handling yeast to prevent infection.
No. You might want to keep your legs from being spread, though. Anyway.
You're like wiping debris all over your beard.
I don't care. Yeah, so you 70-degree water, like a cup, you put your yeast in it, you let it sit for a couple hours, you add some sugar, blah, blah, blah. I don't do that, so don't worry about it. I just take my packet of yeast, open it up, dump it into the 1 gallon jug of organic apple cider, put the lid back on for a second, give it a shake. Don't shake it to hell. You're not trying to like use a shake weight or anything here. You just want to give it a good quick little shake to distribute it. Take your cap back off, put your bung in it, shove your airlock in your bung hole, put the water in your airlock, put in your closet, leave for a week. Take it out of your closet. See, that's why we could have done this last week. Take it out of your closet. Take the... So, you need to watch it during the week. You can, if you're just a lazy son of a bitch, you can just put it in the closet and not even look at it or think about it, and you may get good results, or you may not get good results. Like, so up until like the 1900s something, people didn't know how fermentation worked. They're like, oh, the magical spirits! Spirits? The magical spirits would come and make it. And if they didn't bless your drink, then you did not get booze. You got vinegar. Honey, I made vinegar! Ah! Or you got beer. It's a hit or miss. They didn't understand. They usually didn't use airlocks either.
It's my understanding that beer was originally created to have a way of like making your grains like last longer.
Yeah, I watched a documentary on it, and they think that so people were collecting grains from the field one day, and they're putting in like a ceramic pottery jars.
Yeah, it would have to be ceramic,
and it may have rained, you know, like a sprinkle. And then it got dried out again, and that malted the wheat. And then it rained again, you know, and those filled up the jars. And it sat there for a while, and they couldn't go back out to the fields because it was raining. And they went back out, and they noticed that it was bubbly, and they're like, you know, it was probably guys. It was probably like Grog and like Cooper, because Cooper's always a jackass.
Oh my God.
Grog and Cooper, the cavemen, were like, hey, this is kind of bubbly. And then Cooper's like, I think you should drink it, Grog. And Grog's like, no, he's like, I bet you want to double dare you. And Grog's like, well, fuck, I'm just going to take a drink. And he drinks it. And he's like, oh, my God, it's so good. And they got drunk. And the rest of the cavemen came out, and they're like, God damn it, Grog and Cooper.
If it's that easy, why don't people still just do it that way?
Remember how we were talking about the spirits, and maybe you get booze, and maybe you don't?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't listen to you.
I know. So, yeah. And then you can, like... We want to approach brewing in a slightly scientific manner with controlled things. That's why we talked about bleach and sanitation last week.
Increasing the odds, positive results.
Yes, of getting a good result. Also in that documentary, I think it's called like The History of Beer or something. It was on Netflix for a while. It may still be on there. So the other good reasons why people were drinking beer was because water in the wild is kind of iffy, which is why we talk about water purifying.
Oh, yeah.
Very boringly. And make sure you purify your water. Anyway, so...
That was such a gripping episode.
I know. Purifying your water to make it safe to drink. Because people didn't know that if you boiled your water, that would make it safe. They're like, water from the wild? Maybe I get the poops. Water from beer? Never get sick. And it has calories and shit. Anyway, it keeps them alive because they're poor thing. So, in this episode, to prove the point that when you brew beer, you make the water safe to drink. They wouldn't got the water to brew their beer with from a duck pond.
Oh, God damn.
Like, disgusting, like, duck pond full of duck poo and algae.
Have you ever seen duck shit?
I did. They showed it in the video. And in the documentary, people were sitting around drinking their beer like, oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Oh, we made that from duck pond water. They're like, you what? Yeah, that beer came from duck pond water we collected.
Fucking shit.
Yeah, they probably filtered it first, but still.
I would certainly fucking hope so, but
They just boiled the duck poo and everything.
Duck poo water, that's worse than cow poo water.
This is like the best beer I've ever drank. Where'd you
guys
get this?
You try to put a life straw in that shit and it'll go running.
Yeah.
Ugh. There goes my damn appetite for the day.
Yeah, whatever. So yeah. What were we talking about? I lost track. I was talking about duck poo water and so.
They were making beer out of duck poo water.
They were making beer out of.
We got on the subject of making wheat the grains last longer.
Oh yeah. So
backtrackery.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to give the episode a little filler space and back knowledge because it's only three things, so it'll be a quick episode. Back to the topic. You pitch your yeast, you set it in the closet. The reason that I said that you might want to observe it throughout the week, you don't want to take it out and disturb it and mess with it, but open the closet door or the bathroom door or whatever and look at it, is because the first day you put it in there, you probably won't see much any activity in your airlock. Because airlock's full of water. You'll see bubbles in it. So the first day you may see the tiniest bubbles, plop, 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 plop. The second day, if your yeast is taking and it's converting the sugars at a good ratio, at a good pace, you'll notice some pretty vigorous bubbling. Another reason we want to keep checking, because I've had batches blow the top off the fermenter. If it gets too aggressive.
Aggressive.
Yeah, that's why we talk about having a blowout tube to basically run into water just so it can blow off the fermentation quicker. You can see the airlock. I mean, you're not going to get too much pressure through that.
No.
It'll just shoot that motherfucker out and blow scuds all on your wall. And my closet in my last apartment showed. I had it literally 5-gallon bucket, Mike, with the lid of a 5-gallon bucket securely popped on there and the airlock in there.
And with that, he kissed his security to...
Oh yeah, the security deposit was gone. It blew the lid off, hit the top of the closet, and sprayed the side and back of the closet with bubbles and if you shake up a beer, the fuzzy stuff. Yeah, all that suds hit the wall, and I was like, fuck.
So to paraphrase Tyler Durden, with enough beer, you can blow up just about everything.
You can blow up the world with beer, yeah. Yes. So watch it out the week, and you want to check to see. So your bubbles, your indication on how well your yeast is converting sugars to alcohol. Mm-hmm. The more CO2 they're giving off, you could assume that they're eating the sugar good. They're eating the sugar well, converting that to alcohol and CO2.
Okay.
If you don't see bubbles by the second day, if it's not bubbling...
You're doing it wrong.
There's a couple things that could have went wrong. The temperature may be too low, so... The yeast we're using in most cases kind of likes a warm temperature, room temperature. They like room temperature things. If you're putting it in your cold basement during the winter, you're not going to want to use most L yeast. Like I explained in the show notes. So, Mike, catch the tail, Mike, do you know what the difference between a L and a lager are?
Yeah, one's darker.
Not always. You could have dark lager.
One's thicker?
No. It's the yeast.
Yeah.
There are L yeast and lager yeast. And we're going back to beer on this one.
Yeah, I noticed. We're supposed to be talking about apple cider.
Well, it's the whole fermentation philosophy here.
Alright.
L yeast works on the surface, sort of converting downwards, mm-hmm. eating the sugars that float to the top that way. And it likes to work at 70 degrees.
What about lager?
It likes room temperature. Lager, so think of me like L. I like to work on the top. I like to eat my sugar. I like to be, 70 degrees, nice and warm.
Let me guess.
You're lager, like a lager.
A bottom feeder?
Lagers are bottom feeders.
You called me a bottom feeder. You
oh, bitch. And L works faster.
Oh, so lager is more time consuming?
Yeah, so lager likes it to be about 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. It likes to sit on the bottom, there's a sugar coming here, let me eat you.
So in other words, during the winter...
It's lazy. Yeah, so during
the
winter, months,
you want to use lager yeast. Yeah,
that's why a lot of the lagers come out of, Germany when they have long, cold winters, because you could brew in colder environments. It takes, 3 months, so, come in springtime, you've got your lager ready. Mm-hmm. It's been, slowly fermenting all year.
Now, what kind of yeast would you recommend for, making of apple cider?
I like an L yeast. I think I've used a champagne yeast for a cider before. It depends on, so L yeast usually will kind of cap out around 6-8% alcohol by volume.
Uh-huh.
You can push it with a champagne yeast. You're not going to have that much convertible sugars in it. But you can probably get to about 10 to 12% alcohol by volume.
And that's a pretty hard cider right mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, and that's another good thing about brewing is you go to the store, especially here in, you know, most places, you're going to find beer in the 5 to 6.6 alcohol by volume percentage.
Now, I got a question for you, because I heard this a couple of times on older television shows like the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
Apple cider, by itself, left too long, will it turn hard?
It depends. The answer is usually yes, though. So, like, if you get an apple cider from the grocery store on the juice aisle that's been pasteurized
mm-hmm.
and full of preservatives, no. If you get a fresh apple cider, unpreserved, from the cooler section of your store and let it sit at room temperature a few days, you may get a hard cider. Because the yeast to make apple cider is usually on the peel. So it gets in the batch anyway.
Right.
Like, because it's just wild yeast that's on, you know, the apples in the wild. If you go out in your backyard and you have a bunch of apple trees and you grind them, extract the juices, and you ferment them, and you let them sit out in a barrel for a few weeks to a month, then you'll get natural fermentation and you'll get a hard cider.
Hmm.
But like I said, once again, spirits may bless your brew. They may not bless your brew. We're trying to get the best bang for our buck and make sure that we actually end up with a drinkable product.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you leave it out for a few days, you'll probably notice it being a little carbonated, the lid still on, and having, you know, a slight tang to it.
Yeah, it's just one of those things I've always been curious about.
Yeah.
To see if it was just, you know, like TV bullshit that they're making up to further a plot along, yeah, or if it was actually plausible.
Well, of most of the things that do ferment, apple cider is one of the more readily, like, it's like, if you don't watch it, it's like, oh, fuck, I'm going to ferment. And it'll just start fermenting. Because, you know, like I said, the yeast for it is, unless it's pasteurized, it's going to end up in the cider.
Hmm.
I mean, it's going to end up in there. So it has the ingredients ready. It's kind of like, and I hate to go way off topic here, but it's kind of like human urine. The way we've said before, is urine sterile? Yes, it is. In theory, coming out of the body at, you know, body temperature.
At that moment, it's sterile.
But it has the ingredients to be a bacteria growth, like, petri dish.
Oh, God, yeah.
Same thing with apple cider. It has the ingredients to make cider. It's ready to go. Way off topic again. It's like a domesticated pig. It's a domesticated pig. But if you don't watch it hard enough, it's going to jump that fucking fence and become a boar in like 2 seconds flat. Whee! I'm free.
And then it's going to die. It's going to rot away. And then you're going to paint its skull.
Yes, that's a pretty cool picture. I need to put it on the Spotify Facebook page. But cider, you watch it, see if it's fermenting. You know, you adjust things. You may have to... So for a while on one batch, it just wasn't warm enough in the closet. So I put a heating pad wrapped around it. Hmm. I just happened to have one laying around. You could get special ones for, like, brewing.
Really?
If you just have an extra one, like a heating blanket, heating pad, whatever, you wrap it around it and bring it up to, like, nice 70 degrees. Get that nice bacteria growth happy 70-degree temperature. And then after a week, you've got two decisions to make. You, and what I always did, was after a week, you know, watching it and making sure that the fermentation... You know, start off slow, start bubbling pretty vigorously for a day or two, and then you see it start dropping off, you know, little bubbles. When you stop seeing the bubbles, it's done then. I usually give it like an extra day just in case it's like, you know, super slow, like
right,
still sort of working things out and getting mellow, getting mashed in there. I usually give it a day after I stop seeing bubbles.
Okay.
At that point, you've got two choices. You can take the airlock out, put your cap back on, so save your cap when you make it.
Uh-huh.
Put your cap back on, put it in your fridge, get it nice and chilled, and then drink it. Don't have to go into loft. Or you could take it to secondary fermentation. So like you and me, I always did mine primary single fermentation.
Uh-huh.
So you put the cap back on, you put it in the fridge, it's done fermenting at the time, so you're gonna have a flat cider.
Okay.
secondary fermentation, what you do is you either rack it to a second vessel, so you have another glass, gallon, jug, or whatever, or you put it in bottles. That's why, so you can, like, do first fermentation in, like, so you go buy, like, a jug of distilled water or filtered water.
Uh-huh.
Brew in there, and then transfer to your vessel that was a glass jug for finishing.
Okay.
Or you put it in bottles and you cap them, or 2 liters or whatever, and then you add some more sugar for that. So you have to, I don't have the calculator, you know, you'd put in, like, half a cup or a couple things. Or you can get stuff like corn sugar or maltodextrin and put like a teaspoon or something in your bottles and then cap them so that they will, it's a little bit extra sugar for the yeast that's still alive in there to eat, and it'll produce alcohol and CO2 like always.
Hmm.
But with the cap on it now, not the airlock, the CO2 can't escape, so you carbonate it.
Makes sense.
That's how you get your beer to be carbonated, and no one likes a flat beer. Unless maybe you, because you hate carbonation.
Yeah, but I'm not a big beer fan either, so I've never actually had flat beer.
Maybe I will make you a small batch flat beer. Like, maybe I'll custom tailor you a beer. Well, I'm making you the hard lemonade. We'll talk about it in a minute. But yeah.
This show's just going to turn into a segment of how drunk is he?
Yeah.
You can't drink anymore, so you're just going to make me drink.
Yeah, so you can carbonate it, and then you have a carbonated cider. I really don't like much to any carbonation of my cider. You know, just like, it just tastes better with, like, either the slightest, tiniest carbonation, just a pop. But I don't like a super carbonated cider. So I usually just put mine in the fridge and put the cap on it.
This is going to be an ongoing segment. First, it's going to be Couch Potato Mike's Rock Hard Lemonade, and then there's going to be Couch Potato Mike's Rock Hard Cider.
Yeah. Yeah. You like cider? Oh, in fall, it's a good time. Like, I should make you and your wife a batch of hard cider.
Then the flat beer. No, yeah, this is going to be an ongoing thing. Yeah. I just keep drinking on the show.
Yeah.
Just for the record, it wouldn't be the first time I've drunk on the show.
How are we at 46 minutes?
Because you started talking about brewing again.
Oh, God. Anyway, there's another trick you can do with your apple cider. If you want to, so like we were talking about earlier, usually you can get the 8-10% alcohol by volume range and have like a good hard cider. You can then take a mason jar, fill it with your apple cider that you just made, put the cap on, turn it upside down, and put it in your freezer for a couple hours to a day. Because alcohol is not going to freeze at your house freezer temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
But the water content in your apple cider will. So you're making, I think it's called flapjack?
Yeah, flapjack.
Yeah, so then you get it out of your freezer.
Applejack.
You're right. Good job. Flapjacks or
pancakes.
Our pancakes. Because archaic British language, flap meant to flip something, and a jack was a general usage term for anything. So flapjacks literally mean to flip something.
It's funny, though.
Entomology, yeah.
Interestingly enough, I learned about Applejack originally from a report I'd once did on Johnny Appleseed. Everybody thought he was so noble, you know, about planting apple trees all over the country. But the apple trees he were making these little sour apples.
Oh, yeah.
They were really only good for making apple liquor.
There you go.
Called Applejack.
Yeah. Obviously you can distill it, but you can't distill it because the United government is a jackass. But the Applejack that we're talking about will push alcohol content. You might get it up in the 18% alcohol by volume, 12-18%.
Good.
So yeah, super hard apple cider. And then if I make you guys apple cider, you should make some of that because you like to get drunk if you're going to drink.
Yeah, if I drink, I drink to get slobber knockered.
Anyway, so that is hard cider, motherfuckers. Now let's real quick run through.
No, you see, here's the thing, all right? You wondered, and you gave me that look last time when I tried to stop you when you started to talk about apple cider.
Yeah.
Because I already heard you talking about fucking beer for like 3.5 days.
Yeah.
And I knew that was going to happen. We've spent over 20 minutes just on apple cider.
Yeah.
This is the longest segment of the fucking show.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Maybe we should save the rest of it.
No! I almost, dude.
We can make this ongoing for a while. No, let's save the rest of it. Make a part three. I mean,
no.
I have the demonstration of me drinking the hard lemonade.
I got other episodes I've already planned. I'm itching to get to them. So, real quick, let's run through.
You can't do growing real quick.
Survival Punk James's quick mead. And by quick, it's going to be a lot longer than what we talk about now.
Oh, God.
No. I mean, the process of making it. The process of making it is longer, but it's quicker than a lot of the meads. And I've never had a commercial mead that was worth a flying fuck. You can't go to the store. You can't. And mead is honey wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're going to find it in a liquor store. Usually there's one or two brands, mm-hmm. maybe. The old Viking mead Arunios.
Because yesterday I was talking about a Viking.
Spanish mead.
Well, let's boil this down to brass. Let's bring it down to brass tacks on the process.
Yeah. I made super quick, super dirty, super easy mead.
Super dirty?
Super, like, just sort of quick and dirty and easy. Go to the store, buy...
Like your ex-girlfriend?
Yes. Go to the store, buy 1 gallon of distilled and or spring water. Spring will give you better taste, may not have best results. So buy your 1 gallon jug of that. Go to the aisle that has the honey in it. Buy the 3 pound jug of honey.
It's going to be expensive. Good honey always is.
Yeah, if you have a local honey producer, you can get your honey from there. If you just want to make it quick and easy, go to the convenience store, buy 3 pounds of honey, probably be like $12 or so.
And plus, if you don't remember where we talked about it on a previous episode, locally grown honey is actually really great and hypoallergenic. It'll help you help people with pollen allergies and stuff get over the stuff in their area a lot better. And this way, you can be having a good time drinking your way to that.
Yep. Some of the old recipes call for, because converting the sugars in honey is a little bit hard for yeast sometimes. So you can get like one of those little like school pack boxes of raisins.
Uh huh.
And dump into your mead when you make it to have some extra convertible sugars.
Oh, really?
You can add convertible sugars. You can get yeast nutrient. I did not do that. I did not get any extra sugars because I didn't care really. But I did get one or two lemons to put in there.
Interesting.
Because the recipe I saw called for lemons, and it seemed like it'd be an interesting sort of flavor expansion. And I've had it without the lemons, and I definitely prefer my mead. Oh, and I'm not as thick and not as anyway.
Well, anyway, so back on the process.
You get your spring water. You get your honey. You get your lemons, 2 or 3 lemons, whatever you want.
Okay.
You get your yeast. You need to order this off the interwebs or to local brew supply store.
What's it called?
Just go to the store and get a champagne yeast.
Champagne yeast?
Yes. Okay. That's going to give you the alcohol by volume percentage that you want for a good, you know, good mead. You go home. I did. Pour in like half of your 1 gallon jug of water into your pot that you used to brew in.
Uh-huh.
Bring that up to temperature. I think I got it to a boil. I did. I brought it up to just under a boil. Then I added in my 3 pounds of honey.
Okay.
Just stir to combine it. As soon as you start seeing the boiling bubbles in there, I brought it off the heat, poured it back into my, bring it off the heat, cover it. You want it to drop down to temperature.
Okay.
Because obviously you're pouring it back in a plastic jug, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I got
disastrous.
Yeah. I had a glass carboy that I used for sort of secondary racking. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that later. So you boil it, you let it cool down to like 70 degrees or so, you pour it back into your thing, give it a shake, add in your champagne yeast, give it a shake, put your rubber bong on it. Put your airlock in it. Put it in your closet. 2 weeks. Like I said before, you want to watch it. Make sure it's bubbling. Make sure it's fermenting. Make sure the meat is happy.
Make sure it doesn't explode all over your
closet. Make sure it doesn't explode. At the 2 weeks mark, you can either let it go or I like to do a secondary racking at that point.
Okay.
Bring it out of the closet because meat's going to ferment slow and long, sort of.
Right.
Bring it out of the closet. Transfer it into your sanitized, happy glass vessel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't add any extra sugar at this point.
Okay.
I just don't. Put your airlock back on it, put it back in the closet. Let it go for another 2 weeks. So 1 month fermenting.
It might take a bit, but anything good is worth waiting for.
Oh, good meat is usually like years in the making. Oof. To really mellow out. At the month mark, once again, you have some choices here. You can make a carbonated mead. And if you do, send me your address so I can punch you in the nuts. Because we're not going to make a carbonated mead here. We're going to make a flat mead. You can take it out. What I did, of course, was I took the airlock and the bung out, put my lid back on it, put it in the fridge, and drank it when it chilled off.
Hmm.
It was delicious. You can, at this point, and that's our quick and dirty one-month mead.
Now keep in mind, for proper drinking a mead, you usually need a horn. Yeah, a horn.
A mead horn.
A mead horn.
Yes, William Mayer has one. Yes, you can put it in your closet, or you put it in your fridge, and it'll be ready to drink in a few days. It's my favorite mead that I've had. I don't know how anything in the store that is better. You can leave it in the closet for another 2 months. And that secondary vessel to let it keep going, keep getting mellow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put your lid on it and drink it at that point. You could take it out of the closet at the 1 month mark and then rack it into nice glass bottles with stoppers on them or cap them, put them back in the closet and then let them go. If you have enough, usually you'd have to use a small bottle, but if you get a couple bottles, you could split them up into different sort of batches, as in, you know, you rack them into your secondary bottles, you cap them. And you put one in the fridge for drinking. You put the rest in the closet. You know, at 2 more months, take out a bottle, chill that, drink it. You know, at 6 months, take a bottle out and drink it. So you can taste it during the different time periods and see how it goes.
We should do that.
We should make a mead. You're gonna get me fermenting and stuff. Actually, I want to make a water kefir mead, so that I can drink a fermented sous mead with an alcohol by volume of like -0.00006, but it's fermented and has healthy gut bacteria feeding cultures in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of fizzy. Well, anyway, we should make a mead. And then that's your quick and dirty mead.
Okay.
I'm
gonna have to fucking cut you off there because we'll be 2 hours into the show.
We're at 1 hour right now.
I know, but once you get talking about brewing, dude, you don't want to stop.
Anyway, I'm going to finish up real quick. I'm not making a third part. So tonight, tomorrow, whenever it is,
there will be a part.
We're making hard lemonade. The recipes, I'm going to make it up. I've not found anything good. So Mike's going to go to the store because he never went to Whole Foods to get organic lemonade. He's going to get concentrated. Well, somebody forgot
to remind me.
What? I've reminded you 20 times.
Yeah, but you didn't remind me that day.
Slacker. Mike's going to go to the store and get lemonade concentrate, preferably without any preservatives in it. He's going to get a gallon of...
Spring water.
He is going to bring that back here. I'm going to combine them along with 1 cup of sugar. Shake it around. I'm going to bloom the yeast this time. Maybe I'll do it next week. I don't know. Because the blooming is going to take a while. I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to bloom the yeast. Then I'm going to pitch the yeast into the thing. I'm going to put the airlock on it. I'm going to put it in your bathroom. In your tub, probably. Or under your sink somewhere.
You know we use those things.
Your bathtub usually has toys and stuff. Like clothes, and it's like a treadmill.
Not any... We haven't done that in months.
Anyway...
Not since we fixed it.
Yeah. We'll put it under your sink then or something. We'll put it somewhere dark sink. And cool. And
yeah, it's pretty dank under there, so that'll work.
Yeah. And then next week, on probably Friday night, we'll take it out, put the real top on it, and Mike will drink it on Saturday morning when we podcast.
Yes, Saturday morning.
And yeah, Saturday morning. So like Saturday mid-afternoon, Mike will be like, blizzy 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 blizzy. Blizzablism.
Alrighty.
5 best prepper exercises. This is a really short article, and I'm going to smash these sons of bitches. Probably. This comes from the number 5 very dot best. That's the website. It's a dot best domain.
Even heard of a dot best.
There's lots. I'm actually going to make some of these, but this is an internet marketing strategy to have these little crappy websites to send things to like this. There's an advertiser for the Brita pitcher right there. It's probably what he's trying to make his money on. And there's probably other advertisings and whatnot in here. Five best exercises for preppers written by Dan Vail. That is a pseudonym because people use these on these like click market websites.
What do you got to hide, Dan?
What? I actually want to make ones with like cool funny names, like cool pseudonyms, like
Lance Goodthrust?
No, I'm not making porn sites yet.
Buck Naked?
Buck Naked. My name is Buck and I'm here to... Most likely injuries that preppers, blah, 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 out of shape, face during emergency, probably strained muscles or sprained ligaments. That is true. When a strain or sprain happens to a muscle or ligament, the spinal column, the injury can be especially disabling, blah, blah, blah. Why stretching is considered one of the best exercises for preppers? I do believe that this stretching is one of the best exercises for preppers to avoid those sprains and ligaments. If I'd been stretching, I wouldn't have sprained my ankle. That still kind of hurts. During an emergency, there probably will not be enough time to warm up and stretch during exerting maximal physical effort. Nonetheless, the chances of straining muscles or spreading ligaments are less likely when the body is stretched every day. You can become a subtle leopard.
I disagree with that completely.
Why?
All stretching does is, I mean, you stretch your muscles for a minute, but then it tightens up tighter than it was before. It can actually be detrimental if you stretch at the beginning of a workout.
The only things I've seen about stretching before a workout is you could actually decrease maximal effort. So, powerlifters usually won't stretch before a workout, but if you're long distance running or something, then you should. During CrossFit, we always stretch before a workout, and now that I've not been doing CrossFit and I've not been stretching daily, it's terrible. I'm actually getting back into doing some like daily stretching just so I'm not so stiff and sore. Like even like bending down to the squat position, like my knees are starting to hurt now that I'm not like squatting daily. So take over sit-ups, and they combine these two together, and that pisses me off. These aren't numbered. They're not numbered. And it says the five best exercises.
Yeah.
But these are two put together.
Oh, well, they did sort of number. The second and third best exercises, see?
That's gay.
Are sit-up and some variation of the Superman exercise. These exercises strengthen the stomach and back muscles that help to stabilize the spinal column. Both of these exercises reduce the chances of a strain or muscles or a sprained ligament in the spinal column. Such an injury could occur, for example, when a prepper is shoveling snow during a blizzard or even during a normal snowfall. Yeah,
I'm definitely a fan of sit-ups.
How is that an exercise?
Go into your house and show you, dude.
It looks like it's an extension of stretching.
Well, because, so with Superman, you lay sort of flat on your stomach, face down, and you put your feet together, your arms together, and you go into like a Superman flying position. You lift your feet off the ground, you lift your upper body off the ground, so you're... Chest is sort of not... Arch your back upwards.
Are you doing this in a repetitive thing, or are you just trying to hold the position?
I've seen them both. So you use it to hold, and it'll stabilize your core muscles there. It pulls on your back. Dude, trust me. If you do this, you're not going to be able to hold it for very long.
I'm not saying it isn't beneficial. I'm just saying that's an extension of stretching.
Yeah, well, and it does. I mean, you'll start shaking from the effort of trying to hold that up there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you'll start shaking from the effort of trying to... Hold your arms straight out with a throw pillow on them after so long.
And that builds muscles. Like, you're fatiguing the muscles. Long distance walking. This one I totally agree with.
Yeah, so do I on this
one. The fourth best exercises, and I'd make this number one. Number one. Get your walking in. The fourth best exercise is to walk increasingly long distance. It's also good to practice to do walking while wearing a backpack or carrying something. If a prepper family has a car breakdown, runs out of gas, or gets caught in traffic jam, they may have to walk long distances.
Yeah, walking increasingly long distances. You walk on a regular basis, I mean, you're instantly going to start building up your damn stamina.
Yeah.
I mean, because right now I haven't exercised in a pretty damn good while, so I probably couldn't walk more than five or six houses down from where I live right now without being completely fucking winded and wanting a car ride back home.
Yeah.
But when I started walking for exercise quite a while back when I was losing all the weight, I would walk, and every day I could walk a little bit further because I worked at a place that had the building that I worked in had a sidewalk that went all the way around it. It was a flat level surface. I called it my walking track. And every day I would count how many laps I could do around the damn thing. And every day it kept getting more and more until I was literally running out of time to do it. Then all I did was try to kick up my speed and
with the exception of a couple of days, every day I, for some reason, could do more laps than I could the day before. And I kept this up even on the weekends. There's a ballpark in my hometown.
We should start going.
That has a walking track all the way around. It goes around four baseball fields. And it's like, I think they measured out a mile or a mile and a half or whatever. I can't remember exactly. But after I'd been doing all these laps around the building and everything for a month, I think, at this point, took the wife and kids up there because there's a playground up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, she wanted to walk with me a little bit, but she was out of, you know, practice of walking. Well, not out of practice of walking, but, you know, she hadn't been walking like I'd been walking. She did a lap or two around the thing, and then she went over there, sat and watched the kids and everything. Meanwhile, I walked long enough to listen to an entire movie and a half of the thing, and would have kept walking, but the sun had gone down and she wanted to go home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my stamina was through the fucking roof. I had literally been walking for about 3 hours at that point and could have kept going.
Now that it's cooling down, we should start doing that.
Fuck yes, I love walking.
But you hate this.
Running. The fifth best exercise is running. Running will increase overall muscle endurance and will allow a prepper to continue working at a close to total strength for long periods of time during an emergency. Also, during this era of increasing crime, and especially during a disaster, when crime would become more rampant, running ability could save a prepper's life. A prepper does not have to be a world-class sprinter or a marathon runner. The prepper might need only to be able to run faster and further than other potential victims, and to do so without a muscle strain, ligament sprain, or heart attack. Preppers can do these exercises almost any time, anywhere, and without any equipment. Those advantages can be especially important during a bug out. If preppers have enough time, there are plenty of other exercises that could get them into top shape. The described exercises, however, are the most important ones and should be part of every prepper's work. God, that reminds me of this joke I remember. Two fucking guys running through the woods, bare hot on their ass. Running for their damn lives. One guy's like, man, I don't know how the hell we're going to outrun this bear. He's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. The only thing I got to outrun is you.
Yeah. Yeah. The bear's going to stop. Sadly, I hope they never stop by. Yeah. See, that's what I was saying. They put two of them together.
That's gay.
Yeah. I would add more to that.
Take the fucking time, motherfuckers.
Push-ups, squats, I think are both great ones for preppers to have. The running, just to sort of quickly talk about that, is, yeah, I'm not a fan of, like, I don't ever want to run a marathon. It doesn't scare me. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good for you. But I'm a bigger fan of walking, long-distance walking, and short-distance sprints.
Yeah. I'm behind that.
Yeah. I mean like a sprint, like a 50, you know, short, like 50 meters or something. Yeah.
Like a fucking cheetah. I mean, yeah, cheetah's fastest goddamn animal on the land, but it doesn't run forever that way. It peaks after like 30 to 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is enough to fucking run down its prey on most occasions. I personally think that any exercise that would kind of replicate the shit that you would be doing as a prepper would be most beneficial.
Yeah.
Squatting, doing the squats like you said.
Yeah.
I can see that. Fucking walking and short distance sprinting. I can see those. Yeah. Shit like that.
The core philosophy behind CrossFit, the general physical preparedness, I think covers it the best. And we might talk about that next week. If I don't talk about something food related, but yeah.
What, the basic mechanics of CrossFit?
Yeah, it's the core philosophy of general physical preparedness was like, this is how you, like, perform better at life. You know, like, in life, you probably have to squat down and pick something up. You might have, you know, carry something on your back. You might have to, like pull-ups. Pull-ups I don't have to do often, but, like, I can see a point where, like, you're trying to pull yourself up on top of something or, you know, climb up on top of something.
That would be a great specialty workout for a CrossFit gym, like a fucking prepper's workout.
Yeah. I bet there is one. I mean, I bet there's
Oh, there's specialty workouts all over
the place. I bet you watched that one that was the 300 workout.
Oh, my God.
That was brutal.
Yeah, that was.
So I got this thing from Walmart. It's called the Tactical Tie-Downs. It's like a ratchet strap without the ratchet. It's you pull it, it condenses on itself. It has two hooks on either side. I bought them because I was going to get two of them, but I was broke, so I only got one, for super quick hammock setup.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like tying knots and then readjusting and doing this, you have infinite adjustability because you basically like connect one end to your hammock,
right?
Your hammock hook, the other end to your tree straps.
and then you pull the tactical tie down to tension it. And then you go to the other side and pull that. And it has like a 2,500 pound load limit before it breaks, brake limit. A 700 pound like working load. That's, I don't even know a hammock really that will hold more than 700 pounds. So if you weigh more than 700 pounds, you might want to go to ground camping, my friend. Because I think even you and your wife could both get into the hammock and use these tactical tie downs.
If you weigh more than 700 pounds, you're not going to go camping.
Have you seen some of the people in the survival blogs?
I seriously doubt any of them are 700 pounds.
Oh, I'll show you some pictures, dude. Anyway, that's a big person. But yeah, these tactical tie downs I thought were really neat. And I mean, I can see them being used for, obviously, their intended purpose of, like, you know, strapping stuff down the back of your truck to hold it down. Because they don't weigh as much as, like, the ratchet straps, where you ratchet it down, and you can put your finger... I always hate putting my finger in the ratchet strap thing to release it.
Yeah.
And it's like, ba-boom! Usually just shove, like, a big, long screwdriver in there. These things I showed you, man, you just pull it, and then you pull it the other way to loosen it up.
Mm-hmm.
I ran my hammock across your entire front yard, because the straps were so long... at that point, it was so long that it was hard to get it tight enough to not, like, go all the way, like, I was really close to the ground, but I only had a ratchet strap on one side, so.
That sounds like it would be beneficial if you're in a situation where you can't find two trees close together.
Exactly.
That can often be the case.
Yeah, the trees I put in your front yard were probably, I don't know, 30 feet apart?
Damn.
Yeah, the one that you have your dog tied to and the one with the blue paint on it.
Okay. So animal lovers out there don't get up in arms. I don't have the dog tied to the tree. I have one end of its lead line attached to the tree and the other end attached to a different tree. It's got rain.
He's got run of the whole yard.
Yeah, and I mean, we got like a damn 30-foot fucking thing coming off the lead line, so he's got mobility. Before we start getting fucking hate mail, but he keeps his goddamn dog chained to a fucking tree.
He keeps his pit bull tied to a tree, and then he cockfights him.
Yeah, you're
like, he cockfights his pit bull.
Oh,
who is a good boy?
Big boy, such a good boy.
All right, we're at an hour and 10 minutes. Let's wrap this shit up like a Jimmy hat.
Alrighty,
and y'all get out there and start brewing.
All right, yeah. If you want to sell stuff on the show, jamesatsurvivalpunk.com. If you want to become part of the Survival Punk Army and get discounts to 11 different vendors, get the show on Zip Files, find the link on survivalpunk.com.
If you want to send Catch Potato Mike your dick pics, catchpotatomike@catchpotatomike.com.
I never check that email.
I know. I need to log in to see if you have any email.
Yeah, well, now I will. I'll have a bunch of dick pics.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hopefully they'll all be from Yuff Dimitri.
Yeah.
So I have blackmail. But on that bombshell, it's time to end. So for the Survival Punk podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Sick One Burnett.
And if you're ever doing a podcast, make sure that your partner is not insanely long-winded about something he's passionate about to the point where it damn near runs into a three-part episode.
DIY to make hard cider, bitches!
Use guys.
Use guys.